shit.
سلام علیکم. سلام علیکم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. All praises are Allah's Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure Immaculate Ahlul Bayt. For the last two nights, we've been discussing the idea of ascending and descending visions, ascending or descending apparitions, tamathulat. So if you've missed the last two nights, it may be difficult, but I can't go over it all again because I want to go forward. Then last night, I gave two examples of ascending visions, where the person was awake and experienced these visions whilst awake and saw these visions, not with the physical eye. And those visions, since they were ascending apparitions or visions, they were a result of one's own actions. The person saw the embodiment of one's actions. And we spoke of two stories in Ayatollah Hassan Zadi's book. Just for completion's sake, I want to give now one scenario of an ascending, of a descending vision or apparition, where after transcending the different realms and receiving that divine data from purely immaterial realms whilst awake, someone then converts it into barzakhi pictures. And whilst awake, they're seeing everything, but not with the physical eye. This book is Ayatollah Hassan Zadi's book, and he writes in the 63rd chapter of one of his books, which is called Sarhul Uyun Fi Sharhul Uyun. I recounted in Arabic the story of an incident pertaining to reciting the blessed chapter of Waqi'ah. Surah Al-Waqi'ah is chapter number 56. Now this incident he's going to recall is in relation to reciting this chapter of the Holy Quran. Its summary in Farsi reads as follows, and then he gave the Farsi incident, but I'll just give the translation for you. On the eve of the 3rd of Sha'ban, 1409 after Hijra, the 11th of March, 1989, I was reciting Surah Al-Waqi'ah in my house in Qom. When I reached the verse, وَأَمَّا إِنْ كَانَ مِنَ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ الضَّالِينَ, but if you are of the fabricators, the astray ones, فَنُزُلُ مِنْ حَمِيمٍ, your share will be boiling water, وَتَسْلِيَةُ جَهِيمٍ, an entry into hell. So it's reciting Surah Al-Waqi'ah. On coming to this verse, all of a sudden I realized and saw the apparition of hell. If you pay attention carefully, you'll understand the difference between ascending and descending apparitions. This is an example of a descending vision. Realize the apparition of hell before myself, and the temperature of its flames was rising. Now his wife may have been next to him or in the next room, but she felt no heat. She saw no hell. This is in the barzakhi realm. And the temperature of its flames was rising, and there I intuitionally witnessed Allah's verse. When one intuitionally sees something, it's like how we intuitionally perceive hunger or happiness. It's in unity with us. It's not outside us. And there, I intuitionally witnessed Allah's verse, وَبُرِّزَتِ الْجَحِيمِ لِمَنْ يَرَى. And hell is brought into view for one who sees, but not with the physical eye. For myself, in reality, so he saw this verse for himself, in reality, without it, i.e. without hell, either making contact with me or harming me. Remember with the ascending apparitions, which is a result of the embodiment of one's actions, that did harm him. Here, he saw hell. Maybe he was in unity with hell. However, he wasn't harmed. He was in hell, but he wasn't harmed at all. He wasn't burnt at all. Either making contact or harming me, even though the apparition was realized deep within the perceiver's soul. It wasn't outside him. That vision was in unity with his soul. It was his soul's product. It was a perception of the soul. Don't forget, heaven and hell are dimensions of the soul. There's no great monster outside you waiting for you to beat you with an external physical whip or an external physical fire. Just imagine, for example, in your dreams when you have difficulty understanding these statements, just imagine your dream. Have you never seen fire in your dreams? And you may even feel that temperature in your dreams, but then you wake up suddenly. But there's no waking up in hell. Anyway, here though, he wasn't harmed at all. After all, apparitions are a form of perception. At that time, two matters were inspired upon me. Firstly, were man to purify oneself from material and spiritual contaminations? Now, this is the lesson to take. To purify oneself from material and spiritual contaminations and to preserve one's muraqabah, a certain spiritual device, we haven't spoken about it yet. It's scrutinizing one's actions in a particular manner. We'll speak about this maybe next week. We want to purify oneself from material and spiritual contaminations and to preserve one's muraqabah and divine presence before Allah and one's sincerity, and will want to execute righteous actions, it will be possible for one to be the recipient of apparitions of whichever Quranic verse one recites, or whatever event, irrespective of whether or not the event has been realized, especially if one is in possession of complete tawajjuh and endeavor and focus in relation to visions and their witnessing. So here, if one, with that complete tawajjuh, a presence before Allah, it's a form of meditation, we haven't spoken about it yet. All these experiences arise after one starts that process of tawajjuh. But whoever does it, and drowning oneself in the verses of the Quran, being holy before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they will see the truth of any verse in the Quran. They will see the separation of the seas and Musa passing and Pharaoh drowning. They'll see exactly what happened. Even things which are to happen in the future, because when one transcends immaterial realms, there is no time there. There is no time in the hereafter as we know it here. Therefore, one can go in the past, one can go in the future. But here he says, if one detaches from the physical realm through eliminating one's material and spiritual contaminations, through the Sharia and the Tariqa. Otherwise, when we sleep, we can also transcend those realms. Those who undergo hypnosis, they can transcend realms. You must have heard stories where a 10-year-old suddenly says, I was alive 150 years ago in the Battle of America, for example, the Civil War. And there I was writing a letter. And he says what he had written. He says my name was, let's say, John Smith of 150 years ago. And I wrote this letter. I know where I buried this treasure. And they go and say, well, actually, yes, he's right. They go to the family of John Smith, and yes, there was such a person. He did write such letters. These are all possible because they transcended through hypnosis immaterial realms. There is no time there. On converting that divine immaterial data into pictures, it doesn't matter, one can go in the past, one can go in the future. These things are deja vu experiences are these. Where you say, oh, yeah, I saw that. But we only see it momentarily. Some people can see it for a bit longer. Some people for very long. Some people in Laylatul Qadr for the whole year. However, these stories where the 10-year-old says, I was before, I did this, I did that, the conclusion they make is wrong. After they explain everything, they say, therefore, reincarnation exists. This boy was reincarnated. He was John Smith, and now he's, let's say, this other boy of a totally different human phenotype. They suddenly bring the question of reincarnation. No, we don't believe in reincarnation. That's a wrong conclusion. All the facts he gave were correct, and they're possible. Because when you transcend the immaterial realms, like in your sleep, or through spirituality, or through hypnosis, or after physical death, when it automatically happens, you transcend to realms which know of no time. But to say, therefore, reincarnation is a reality, that's wrong. We'll speak more about why reincarnation is impossible later. Secondly, so from this experience that Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh had, that was the first lesson. Secondly, he says, the apparitions that take place within the perceiver's soul is one thing, whilst their manifestation with the soul is quite another. You see, with the ascending apparitions, the actions were manifested and embodied, and it harmed someone. It harmed him. He felt pain. Here, though, with the descending apparitions, he was in hell, he saw hell, but he wasn't harmed. He says the former is not a cause of harm or distress for the perceiver, i.e. with descending apparitions, like with the Mi'raj of the Holy Prophet. He was in hell, he saw everyone, how they were being punished in hell. Then he went to heaven. Rather, Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh says, this apparition of hell, without causing me any harm, it leads to a joy-granting knowledge and a relief-providing kashf, unveiling for one. The manifestation, however, is a cause of harm and chastisement. So ponder with insight into this point, as it reads in my book of poems, the disclosures that enter the heart from the unseen realm. If there is anyone who can equally bear it, I may disclose it. That's just a line in his poems. So you see, this was an example of descending apparitions. It's possible. Whatever verse in the Quran, you can see its reality. You can see heaven now. You can be in hell now. But not, you won't be harmed. As a result of that spirituality that you did, you managed to convert that divine data, the soul converted it. Allah's knowledge, the soul converted through ascending into barzakhi pictures, which are more tangible. This is the reality in Mi'raj, and this is the reality in Revelation. We will speak about Revelation in closer to Laylatul Qadr, inshallah. One final point before I leave this point. He says he was reciting Suratul Waqi'ah. We have, in traditions, we have the concept of khutum, khutum of chapters of the Holy Quran, where a chapter of the Holy Quran is recited a number of times in a specific manner at a certain time. Here it's apparent that Ayatollah Hasanzadeh was occupied with this series of reciting Surah Al-Waqi'ah. In the traditions, there are two ways of undergoing this khat, this series of finishing a certain chapter in a certain way. One of them, Allama Majlisi has mentioned in this tradition from Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, that whenever the first day of the lunar month in the Islamic calendar, whenever the first day is Monday, there's one way you can undergo reciting Surah Al-Waqi'ah, Imam Sajjad says. He says, on day one, which is a Monday, day one, not on the eve of the first day, you recite Surah Al-Waqi'ah once. Then on the second day of the lunar month, you recite it twice. On the third day, thrice. On the fourth day, four times. On the fifth day, five times. Up until day number 14, where you recite it 14 times. And then there's a dua, and Imam Sajjad says, alayhi salam, whoever does it, he says what the benefits are. It's in relation to wealth, or those who are in difficulty, in relation to sustenance. But, and one can benefit a lot from this. As long as one is reading with complete tawajjuh, presence before Allah, and the focus is there, one can benefit. But that wasn't the khat which Ayatollah Hasanzadeh was reading, because he said, on the eve of the 3rd of Sha'ban, 1409, and it wasn't a Monday, the 1st of Sha'ban that year, on investigating it. What he underwent was a second way of undergoing reciting Surah Al-Waqi'ah in the khutub, and that's this, that one starts on Wednesday night, any Wednesday night, i.e. on the eve of Thursday, which is Thursday night. It doesn't have to be the first day of any lunar month. You start and you recite Surah Al-Waqi'ah five times. And then on the eve of the next day, on the eve of Friday, which will be a Thursday night, you recite Surah Al-Waqi'ah 11 times. And then on the eve of Saturday to the eve of Wednesday, so Friday night to Tuesday night, every night again, five times. Now how many chapters will that be? Anyone calculate that? 41, yes, well done, yes. So that's 41 all in all. And then after each chapter you recite, there is a dua. Say, for example, Allahumma in kana rizqi fi samawat anzilhu. Allah, if my sustenance is in the heavens, reveal it upon me. Wa in kana rizqi fi al-ard fa akhrijhu. And it goes on, the duas. So these things are important tools that the ulama have given. It's just that one has to do it with focus, with presence. If one doesn't complete or master the Sharia, these things won't be productive when they want to delve in them. It's for their own benefit. And the benefit in the khatm of Surah Al-Waqi'ah, in general, it's in relation to wealth, but there are many things you can encounter. One example was that which Ayatollah Hasanzadeh saw. He went to hell. It was limited what he saw there. It was joy granting to him that knowledge. In the Mi'raj of the Holy Prophet, though, he saw everything in hell. How people were to be punished. How people are being punished, but they don't see it at present, those people who are alive. Because heaven and hell, they exist right now. Just you don't see it now because you're drowned in the physical realm. From Barzakh onwards, it's only immaterial. There you'll see everything, and there's no waking up. It's not a dream anymore. It's not a sleep anymore. Okay, I think that will be enough for, that was just for completion's sake in relation to yesterday's lecture. On today's lecture, I wanted to very briefly go through something. It's in relation to you are what you eat. There are some aspects to eating which is very useful if we get to know and practice. They're very simple things too. Things like the Sharia have told us, but maybe we haven't paid attention to them. Or maybe we didn't know why the Sharia was saying these things, or is saying these things. The Sharia is very important. Ahkam is very important. Yes, maybe scholars like me, we've failed in presenting Ahkam in a pleasant way to the youth, and suddenly they get bored of it. And that's something that people like me, it's our responsibility to convey. But Ahkam is very sweet, especially if you get to know the esoteric dimensions behind them. Now, before I speak about the eating, just one or two introductory points as a preface to the main point. لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانَ إِلَّا مَوْسَعُ Man is but is nothing but that which he strives for. You are your actions. In chapter 11, verse 46, Allah says to Prophet Noor, قَالَ يَا نُور O Noah, in relation to Noah's son, Allah is saying this, إِنَّهُ لَيْسَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ He's not amongst your family. This is the spiritual family that Allah is meaning. إِنَّهُ أَمَلٌ غَيْرُ صَالِحٍ Rather, he, your son, is non-righteous actions. Not the owner of non-righteous actions. He is non-righteous actions. You are your actions. The hereafter is a product of your actions. Your hereafter is in unity with you, like your dreams are in unity with you. You're shaping your hereafter, moment to moment, in this world, as you act. Your actions build your body from Barzakh onwards. And you're going to be in unity with that body you've created. Maybe you've created wolves and pigs or stones or whatever. Moment to moment, you're building your hereafter now. When the Sharia says this is wajib, because this is important to build something proper in your hereafter. When the Sharia says this is haram, because you're building something which is going to be detrimental to you in the hereafter. It's going to be bad. You're going to be a pig, a wolf, a dog. You're going to suffer. You've just built it by doing this haram action. When it says it's mustahab, to do this action, it's you're shaping your resurrection in a good way. It's not essential, but you're adding to it. You're building your heaven better and better. If it's makruh, you're shaping it in a negative way. It's not detrimental yet, but beware. You see? When the Sharia says, if you do this action, Hurul Ain will be the embodiment of those actions. If you do ghusl, for example, if you do wudu, and I'll speak more about wudu and ghusl, how it should be done. Be you man or woman, the embodiment of doing those actions properly is Hurul Ain. Men have it, women have it. It's nothing physical there though. It's all in the immaterial realm. They exist now. But we're drowned in this physical realm, we don't see them. Some people have seen them. It's all a product of your actions. Different actions are embodied in different ways. أَإِنْدَهُ إِلْمُ الْغَيْبِ فَهُوَ يَرَى Does one have knowledge of the unseen to qualify as a seer? Not with the physical eye though. We're blind in this world. Islam has set higher goals for us and we just were occupied, preoccupied with the minimum that Islam has in store for us. And that's okay, the minimum. I'm not criticizing that. The letter of the law is important, but it's a minimum. Heaven will be a minimum. in spirituality, it can be divided into two broad categories. One is taming the animal side, the animal dimension within you. And that's when animal attributes predominate over you. And then, after taming the animal dimension, refining the heart. I just want to speak about the first dimension tonight, inshallah, in the next 20 minutes or so. And that's how to tame, how to domesticate one's animal side. Until this is tamed, we won't be able to grow spiritually. We have to grow after taming the animal dimension. The more you are predominated by your animal attributes, the lesser your spiritual elevation will be. The lesser your spiritual growth will be. The more you domesticate or tame or discipline the animal dimension of you, it will facilitate that spiritual growth. Now, in the Sharia, during the day, there are 101 different things that we can do, and the Sharia has told us to do, and the rationale behind the Sharia telling us to do these things is because the Sharia wants you to tame and control and discipline your animal side, and not to let your animal side get out of hand. Now, there are many things, but I only want to focus in the domain of eating now, being the month of Ramadan. How we eat and how what we eat affects our spirituality. I want to go through some examples for this to become more evident. But the criteria that you have to take in mind is we want to maximally disassociate ourselves from being animals. Because many of us now may be animals because of our actions. We may have a human phenotype, but the barzakhi phenotype, the hereafter phenotype that our actions are creating, if it's only sins, it's only animals. And we are in essence animals, if that's the case. And we're going to suffer. The I will suffer in the hereafter. When one is just surrounded and in unity with wolves, sharks. Have you ever dreamt of sharks, for example, attacking you, or a dog attacking you, or a wolf attacking you? Then you wake up out of your dreams. That shark is you in your dream. It's an embodiment of an action you did in those days. That wolf is you. That dog is you. These are giving you clues. What were you doing wrong? What sins are you, you know, incorporating within yourself? Anyway, the criterion here is to maximally disassociate ourselves from the animal dimension. So, in the manner of eating, the Sharia comes and says, it's better not to eat alone. See, this is one of those secrets again. Why? Why should the Sharia come and say that? Don't eat alone. Well, who eats alone? It's animals who eat alone. When you eat alone, you precipitate that animal dimension. It's very easy. Look how you eat in front of people and how you eat when you're alone. It's different for most people. See, when you eat alone, it precipitates that animal side. Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam would never eat alone. He would walk for kilometers if necessary to find someone to eat with. See, that's someone who's in control of his nafs. Although when Nabi Ibrahim invited people for dinner, it wasn't just a matter of taming the animal self, the animal dimension. Nabi Ibrahim executed there is etheric dimensions of being a guest to someone, being a host to someone, sorry. Month of Ramadan, we are the guest of Allah. Allah is the host. What does that mean? Look at Nabi Ibrahim Sira, his conduct. Yes, he would never eat alone. He'll walk even for kilometers to find someone. Doesn't matter, even if they were non-Muslim, he would bring them in. Even if they were non-Muslim. Let alone Muslims, let alone our brother Shias. Even non-Muslims, even mushriks, he would do it. Why? Because it wasn't only about physically eating. The whole concept of inviting others for food and being a host to a guest, the esoteric, the inner rationale behind it is for you to give spiritual food to the guest. And that's what Allah is giving us during the month of Ramadan. This physical food is only a conduit. It's a route or route to that spiritual food. And we see it in the story of Nabi Ibrahim many times, alayhi salam. Many of those mushriks were having food with Nabi Ibrahim, and Nabi Ibrahim was explaining to them some truths of religion very properly, doing Amr Ma'ruf in a good way, not in a bad way. These scholars like me, sometimes we can do Amr Ma'ruf in such a bad way that waves and waves of people just go away from congregations. We have to be careful. Scholars have to love their congregations. They have to have compassion for their congregations, care for them, especially if you want to wear the clothing of the Prophet. There should be no ego anymore. Okay, someone's done you wrong. Someone has an ego problem. Someone does haram. We still have to love them. It's a responsibility, it's a duty, especially for the scholars, but for everyone, even for non-scholars. Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, when having the physical food, now he's giving the spiritual food. Many times they would convert and they would become Muslim. See, this is what inviting is all about. Today, inviting people to dinner is totally changed today. It's the dinner itself which is the whole purpose. Or getting around and just gossiping and doing different things. It's a minority who think of the Ibrahimi way of inviting people for dinner. Then when someone invites you, go. It's bad to reject it. Someone who may yaruddul ihsan kalhimar, one who rejects, someone comes to you and says, I want to invite you for dinner tonight. If you reject it, it's like a donkey. Attribute, if this becomes habit, and someone comes to you, you say, no, I can't come to your house. You'll be acquiring donkey attributes because they don't know how to reply to beneficence. You're rejecting spiritual food. Okay, today this is now, really people don't know about this too much. But that's the whole, when you see traditions like that, it's because when you're rejecting an invitation, you're rejecting that spiritual food. So, eating alone may activate, may precipitate, may enhance that animal dimension. One last point in relation to eating alone, which it should be done. In Iran, for example, in many parts, this is slowly, I'm seeing it happen. In America, I don't know, but I think maybe in America it's even more due to the structure of society and how people have to work. The fathers, or in America, fathers and mothers, they're never there for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. See, this is a problem. Because in those gatherings, don't underestimate how you can contribute to the safe upbringing of your children when you're all around eating. Then you say, okay, I have commitments at work, okay, it's okay. But don't come complaining to us 20 years down the line, our son is like that, our daughter is like that. It's too late now. You have all this time to speak about bringing up children one day, maybe in 2 days' time or so. The point is this, that you can give that spiritual food to your children in those gatherings. Now, if you can't be present 3 times a day, at least try twice. If you can't be present twice, at least try once. If you can't be present once, there's a problem. Don't work so hard. There's no responsibility for you to keep on working. Believe me, your children will be satisfied with a lower income. But the mother and father, they have a very important say in the child's upbringing, especially from 7 to 14. Anyway, so that's something one has to make an effort. Then the Sharia says, eat slowly. Why? It says, eat in small morsels, small pieces. Why? See, the Sharia is training you here. You're not an animal, you're a human. You eat like a human. See? And so on and so forth. Next is the timing of eating. Now, this is a problem in America. I mean, I've come here now 3 years. And I've been here every 3 months, roughly. And about 10 to 12 states. This was the first time, alhamdulillah, I had the honor of being invited to Seattle, and I thank everyone for the invitation. So, I'm very new to you people, so this is not in relation to you, but those 10 or 12 states, everywhere I went, this problem exists. And you may not think it's a problem, but I'll tell you where the problem is. You want to have lunch. One day you have lunch at 1 o'clock. Another day you have lunch at 12. Another day you have lunch at 2. Another time you have lunch at 3. Another day you miss lunch. Another time you have a late lunch at 4, 5. What's the problem with that? The problem is there's no disciplining the soul. You're letting the animal side let loose a bit. You eat whenever you can. No, that's not a human trait. No, you discipline the soul. You tell it when to eat. See, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, he would eat lunch only at 1. They once brought up dinner 5 minutes early at 12:55. He said, come in 5 minutes. You see, that's an example of how to control, discipline the soul. If you discipline the soul through eating alone, that soul's going to be hard. It's going to be disciplined in other areas of your life. But if you just let it loose, I'll have it at 1 tomorrow, the next day you'll have it at 4. There's no disciplining. You're just letting the loose. So let loose. Now, how many meals a day? Okay, the traditions apparently says 2 meals a day, one in the morning and one at night. Now we're used to 3 now. It's not a problem to have 3, as long as you don't eat a lot in all 3. That's a problem. And we have traditions where only eat when you're hungry. This Islam isn't vegetarian in its entirety, but it does have a vegetarian dimension to it. Some traditions speak of having meat once every 2 days, once every 3 days. This mass stocking of meat and animals, and this mass production of meat, with how farming is rotated and how it's, you know, progressing today, this is not what Islam ever wanted. It's gone totally out of control, this meat production. Meat isn't something to have, you know, every day, twice, 3 times, or no. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is spiritual. And we'll come to it in a minute. But I don't want to say don't have meat. Maybe once a day, and little. I mean, if you have it for lunch and dinner every day, unless you have, you know, very little for lunch and dinner. I don't want to change your eating patterns. I just want you to acknowledge these things. I don't want, you know, tomorrow suddenly everyone's lifestyle changes and problems arise. No, just think about it. Slowly, everyone for themselves. Incorporate it for themselves. Then, the frequency of eating. This is also a problem here. Everyone, when they go to work or during work, they always have coffee in their hands. Coffee is something very essential here. Or snacks, cookies. There's nothing wrong with coffee or cookies or... But we eat it freely. Oh, we have a bit of time here, let's just have a cookie. There's no discipline again. See, that's how animals eat. Oh, let's just have something here. We're humans. The Orafor have given these prescriptions of how to eat. I don't want to really... My fear is if I were to tell you, then you practice them, you're going to make life difficult for your parents or... I don't want to do that. But you control yourselves. Okay, just control your eating patterns. That's all. That's the message to give. Okay. Then what we eat, that's also important. There are many wisdoms behind the rulings we see in the Sharia. Why is the pig haram to consume? Now, some people say because it's a dirty animal and this and hygiene reasons, and some people go into microbiology and they want to find something and they may find some truths. I don't deny that. Some people go into chemistry. He's a professor in chemistry. He does some research. He says, oh, they have nitrates more than other meats. That's why it's not. It may be a wisdom, but that's not the cause. You know, it may be true, but don't think that Islam stops there. There are many wisdoms behind it. One of the wisdoms is this. You eat the meat of a pig, you become pig-like. It's very simple. The Orafor accept this as a principle. You are what you eat. That's why the pig is haram. That's why the dog is haram. Because we don't want to be pigs or dogs. Why are predators haram in Islam? Because we don't want to become predators. You will become predator-like. Therefore, wolves, tigers, these things are haram. Okay. Sheep, you know, cattle in general, camels, that's okay to eat. Because they're benign. But even, they don't have any particular predator qualities, for example. They're benign animals, the sheep, the cow. And their effects will be benign, unless you overeat them. And if you overeat these, the cow meat or meat of sheep and so on and so forth, you will become cow-like. What does it mean to be cow-like? Very lazy. Get up very late from bed. Oh, okay, later. No, not now. There's no disciplining you. And you overdo it with the meat. That's what happens. These are wisdoms behind this. The rabbit, for example, is considered haram to consume. It's not a predator, but it has predator-like instincts. Have you seen when it digs through the soil or earth, for example? See, it goes even to that extent. You know, these, even if it has predator instincts, vicious instincts, violent instincts, Islam says no, it's haram to eat. Only with the cattle. And this applies with other foods. You can just think insects and so on and so forth. All these things apply. Now with the elephant, the bear, and other animals, there's another reason why they're haram. But if I start with this reason, it's just going to confuse you more. Because I have to explain it in some detail, and we don't have time for that. In chapter 6, verse 119, فَكُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. Eat that which Allah's name is read upon it. Now this verse has many dimensions to it. The superficial dimension to it is that we believe that cows, sheep, and other cattle, when they are to be slaughtered, they have to be slaughtered in a particular manner, with certain prerequisites. One of them is the Bismillah has to be read at the time of slaughtering it. And that's one meaning. It's important. Don't say what's the difference between that and cows which haven't been. Bismillah is being read over it. It's all about barakah. That meat has barakah when it's slaughtered with Allah's permission. And with someone who's reciting, so with someone who's a believer, a monotheist, it has barakah. Sometimes you see someone who is not a believer and someone who is a believer, they both do the same actions. On the superficial side, they both actions look exactly the same, but one has more barakah than the other. So take it seriously. Don't just have any meat. Maybe we can go through the Sharia, what the rulings are in relation to meat here, but I don't want to go through it in this lecture. But the esoteric dimension of this verse is whatever you eat, recall Allah, say Bismillah, whatever you eat. Because whatever action you do, Allah fully, that's spiritually elevating for you. Or you're recalling Allah in that action. Whatever action, including eating, that you do Allah lessly, that eating is void. فَكُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. Even when you're eating. Okay, the traditions say when you eat, you start with Bismillah. If there are three different foods, with every food when you start, say Bismillah. And say it loud, don't be embarrassed. Educate those around you. But then the second and third and fourth Bismillah, say it inside. But recall Allah from morsel to morsel. That's going to be difficult. It doesn't matter, take your time. You don't want to master everything in a day. Start with saying Bismillah. Start with ending with Alhamdulillah. Recall Allah in all your actions. And that way you grow. Slowly, slowly recalling Allah becomes second nature to you. Why has the Sharia for everything? There's a dua. Why? From the toilet to the bathroom to the bedroom to the kitchen to leaving the house to entering the house. Why is there a dua for everything? It wants this recalling Allah to be second nature. And inshallah then we can grow spiritually. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala ta'ala.